Despite your efforts, Ryan, I plan on panicking.
Don't panic.
I'm going to panic.
You're not a panicker.
Could you imagine that, though? You hear the sirens, you look outside, and it's sunny.
Yeah. Oh, you never know.
It's one of those sun warnings that they're now throwing down at us. I'm going to panic, Wendy, and I invite you to panic along with me.
You don't have to invite me.
You're just going to panic. All right, we'll have some panic time later on. Hi, everybody. It's Bill, and it's Wendy, and it's you. And if you want to join in, well, you know how to do it. It's 312-981-7200. You know what I forgot to tell you that I had on Sunday, and it had been probably 10 or 11 years since I'd had one. I had a Shamrock Shake.
Wow.
I know.
You don't typically go that route.
No, because with all due respect to McDonald's, and people will tell you that, oh, I love the milkshakes over at McDonald's. They're not true milkshakes. It's not real ice cream. It's processed dairy, and it's not ice cream. And I'm a purist. I like a real milkshake with ice cream and milk on it. And McDonald's, although they put out a fine product, it's not a real milkshake. It's just not.
You're a shake snob. I had to watch myself there.
You almost swore at me in German. I thought Ryan was going to yell at me.
I didn't know
German.
What was going to come out of my mouth there. I always joke with my wife that it's just a vanilla one that they dye green.
It isn't, well, though. There's mint in it, and that's what ruins
that's
it.
That's what she says, but is it just in your brain?
No, they've changed it. It used to be vanilla.
In the early days, that's all it was in the first few years of it. And then they changed it, and they put mint, and now they've added a bunch of little extras to it. Like kale.
Everyone's eating kale these days. Throw some
That's
kale
just for Dave Ennett.
Yeah.
The McEnnett. You got to go in. It's on their special. Every restaurant has a special hidden menu, so that's what that is. I wanted to try the chocolate Shamrock Shake, and that's what I ordered, but that's not what I got. They did not put chocolate in it. It was just a traditional.
You didn't take it back?
No, because I put it in the bag, and I drove away, and then I realized it was, you know, I was like 5 minutes past, so...
It's not, I'm not going to just blame McDonald's, but I have to tell you this. You have to check everything.
That's true.
I am
That's
sick
so
of
true.
Double checking for everyone.
You would think, and I don't want to rag on the people who work at McDonald's because I know it's a tough shift if you're working at McDonald's. But when your only job is to take an order that which says like no onions or no pickles or no tomatoes and you put that on there, you've not done the one thing that you've been hired to do.
And there is no excuse now because now they have the video screens
right.
And they say, does that look correct to you?
Right.
Yeah, could you work off this list and make it correct?
Well, this is the issue, though. McDonald's is starting to do it. Wendy's, they're doing all automation now where you go up and do touch screen, less and less human interaction. Eventually, your burgers are going to be made by McRobot 2017 or whatever.
But do you think, Ryan, without swearing at me in German, do you think... that will make the process easier to fool or harder to fool?
It removes one aspect of human error, right? Because now you're doing the transaction, the money transaction, whether you swipe your card or you put the money in, and you know that's one less thing they have to focus on. Now their focus needs to just be on the screen and assembling your bag. So I suppose it can help. You know, there are going to be people, obviously, who argue that, you know, machines are taking over, obviously, people's jobs. That's been kind of what the Fight for 15 movement has been about, too. But, you know, people actually, in the research that I've done, people, especially millennials, they like that process. They don't like going up
Less
to a counter and ordering. They like, and now, if you go over some of these places like Wowbow, you swipe your card, it knows what your last order was.
Really?
And it says, do you want this again? And so if you're a regular, yeah, boom.
Wow.
And it's just sitting there
That's
waiting
impressive.
For you.
The touch screens I have not seen. Is that going to be in the drive-thru? Because you always get your person that pulls up and it's like, let me see.
Right.
And I am very anal about things. I know, you know, I'll admit it. I do admit it. But even like when we're going to Taco Bell, I pre-order on the app because I cannot stand when you have four different people in the car and it's like, what do you want? Well, don't do that.
Right.
Have it ready to roll. Look at the menu online. Tell me what you want. And then I write it on a post-it note or use the app and then I'm in and out.
Right.
But the problem is that the menu is so large now. You drive up to the Wendy's and the thing is like 7 feet tall with like 12 different order possibilities, and you're like, well, oh, wait a minute. What is this here?
But isn't it fun when you go in, there's always a half a dozen people looking up at that giant board.
I know.
And it's
McDonald's.
Although it's large, most of the basics have been there and will continue to be there. It hasn't.
But they have, as Ryan pointed out, added so many new things.
And they've got neon green drinks now.
I know.
It's true.
I know.
Everything's got Doritos on it, right? It's Taco Bell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doritos Locos Tacos.
Would you like Doritos? Chicken. Would you like Doritos added to that? Well, let me think about that. Yes, I would like that in my Pepsi.
The tortillas are now made of chicken, which
I have not tried that.
I'm not either, but was that a necessity? Was there a huge outcry for
Listen, tortillas? I love fried chicken more than the next guy. Oh, I'm a girl. But I don't need it at Taco Bell. If I want chicken, I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A or
Why did
somewhere
they stop
else.
At tortillas? Can I get napkins made out of chicken when I'm in there? I'm going to ask for that.
That's a great idea.
Now, have you guys done Sonic before? Because that's the one where you pull up and you hit the button and then they come to you.
Yeah.
And that might be kind of...
That's almost like a throwback, right, to the old drive-ins Sonic, right?
Yeah.
Technically, but they don't have the trays that clip onto your window.
I like those.
At the A&W store.
Yeah, A&W had that and Dog & Suds had that. I like that. So I like the interaction that you get, like... Everybody goes, no, it's the wave of the future because you don't have to talk to anybody. You just press the buttons and then the food is ready. But I like the interaction. This is the reason I go to the bank all the time. I like talking to the people who work there.
I'm sure they love talking to you too.
They do.
Hey,
they've got nothing else. No one else goes to the bank.
It's the one guy who comes in.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill's here. It's Wednesday.
See, when the ATM's broken, I get scared. Oh no, I've got to go in and interact with someone. How do I withdraw money without my ATM?
Although, listen to this. A couple of years ago, at the last radio station you and I worked at separately, there was a McDonald's right there on State Street. It was right around the corner from the radio station. So about once every other week, every third week, I'd get something. So for a while, and they may still have it, I don't know. There's some sort of a crispy chicken sandwich that McDonald's either had or still has.
They do have one, a McChicken, which is on the dollar menu, which isn't even a dollar.
It's not the McChicken. It's
buttermilk
like,
ranch chicken.
Yeah, but it's the word country is in it somewhere. It's like country crispy chicken or something like that. It's some variation on that. So I would always get that. I liked that. And then one time I ordered it, and the lady goes, oh, we don't have those. And I go, yeah, you have those. I get it every couple of weeks. And she goes, nope, don't have them. I go, you do have them. And then I pointed up at the menu. I was saying the words out of order.
Get out of
so
here.
So she wouldn't bring me one because I didn't say it in the proper order.
She didn't understand. That's crazy.
I know. I said country and crispy
enough.
And chicken. I jumbled them somehow.
Can I make a suggestion, too? The menu boards... They should have two. I know that would cost them more money, but when a line is long, there should be one back a little bit so you can kind of decide what you want before you get to the window. Because as you pull up, the pressure is on. Yes.
Okay, all right.
And you usually have to curl around the building, too, so it's not like you can see it from
exactly.
Three,
that's what I mean.
Back.
So either put it earlier.
Yeah.
Just so, you know, you can decide, and then when you get, because, you know, I go into a panic mode if I don't have my order ready.
But a lot of
especially with all these new kale offerings.
Right, that's true.
I will never get that.
A lot of them have they're almost like billboards as you approach the regular menu. Have you tried the onion ring sandwich? You know, it's that kind of little, the onion ring sandwich with a chicken tortilla. I'm in. Like, all right. So there'll be four or five of those little mini billboards.
But not the major one.
Not the major one. No.
And you're right. There's just too much to choose from. And then, if I may say, there is an Andy's custard place near us
that
opened a few years ago. And it is really good. They have the best turtle sundae ever.
Yeah.
There's a menu board that you pull up to, and you can decide what you want. And then the first time I went there, I just waited.
Yeah.
Well, no, the menu board is for you to gaze, and then you go up to the window to order.
Oh,
so everyone's
right.
Honking at me. I'm like, what? They're not taking my order. Someone had to get out of the car and say, you pull up to the window and order face to face.
If someone was swearing at you in German, I know who it was.
I always get stuck behind you at the toll booth too, don't I?
I have.
I always get stuck
pass.
Behind the one person from Indiana who doesn't know how to operate it. I love you, Indiana, but there's always one.
Always.
And it's not a tornado, Indiana.
Panic. All right, we'll take a quick break. There's callers on the line. Stay there. We'll get to you in a minute. 312-981-7200. If you'd like to jump in, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Left and it's Wendy Snyder. Let me quickly catch you up. I don't like to brag, but I had a Shamrock Shake on Sunday. I thought it was the chocolate Shamrock Shake. Chocolate and mint together, but no, it was the traditional. Although they spruced it up in the decade or so since I've had one, a lot more whipped cream on top with green sprinkles and a cherry. It's not just the processed milkshake that they used to give you. So it looks jazzier. It tasted good.
Yeah, I forgot to ask you. Did you enjoy it?
I like the taste. Yeah.
All right. You also mentioned the naked chicken chalupa.
Yes.
Not by name. Which is why you didn't get
this
it.
This is very provocative for me in the morning to talk about that. But
I got to tell you, I am a huge fan of Taco Bell. I really am. I'm a big beef chalupa supreme. Love it.
Yeah.
And I can't believe I, who loved fried chicken and Taco Bell, have not tried it. But Dee, you tried the naked chicken chalupa?
Oh, my God. It was good. When my son was little, I'm right from countryside, and when my son was little, he wanted to go to Taco Bell because it was the hottest thing around. And I said, you know what? I'm sorry. Steak for 59 cents just doesn't cut it for me. And taco spelled backwards is O-catch. So
are you a Harry Carey descendant?
I stayed away from there with all the alternatives we have, especially in countryside.
Oh, my God. And it's like fast food alley.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And I heard that, and I said, I got to go. And I pulled in, and I probably was the loneliest person looking there because I just had my one little chicken chalupa on my plate. And
oh, you ate inside.
I did. Well, I didn't know where the window was.
Oh.
So I went inside, and I sat by myself. Nobody else was ordering it but me, but it was terrific. And I said to the girl, I hope they don't get rid of these. And she said, they're going to be gone.
Oh.
So, and that Shamrock thing, what is that made out of?
It's just like a processed dairy drink.
Yeah, stop, you're right there.
Yeah, it's not really ice cream.
Food service.
It
still tastes good. I like soft serve ice cream better than real ice cream.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, after, especially with Andy's down the block, coming home from a campground weekend, you know, they always taste good. They cool the pipes. But I'll tell you what, when you read the ingredients, it's kind of creepy.
Yes, sure.
You know, that's why I don't read.
For that reason.
Exactly. Books or ingredients.
Yeah, it's scary.
Well,
Dee, thanks.
I work at a school, so I kind of do food service and half-breed.
Oh.
Well, I'm going to try the naked chicken chalupa if it's still available.
Limited
just
time
because
only.
Of you.
Oh, don't do it naked, though. I mean, that's why they wouldn't let you by the window.
Thank you,
Dee. Thanks, Dee.
You guys have a great day.
All right, you too. How could they put it? I mean, they keep saying in the ads for a limited time only, but I keep reading stories about how they've so outsold what they ever expected to.
I heard it wasn't selling.
No, there was just a story.
Really?
Yeah, last week about how they've like doubled or tripled their expectations on how many they've sold.
Well, they've worked it out so the McRib and the Blackhawks happen at the same time. And now McRib is gone.
Well, that always has to do, I'm not making this up, with the pork market. Like, they always buy it at the lowest, and that's when they do the McRib once or twice a year.
There's really pork in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
Not a lot, but, you know, a little sprinkling of pork on there.
Can I ask you a shake question?
Yeah.
I did go to Andy's this weekend, and the boys wanted shakes, and I said that is a waste of calories. If you're going to get an ice cream treat, go for the sundae. And they said, no, we really like a shake. And I said, but that's not.
I think it's probably caloric-wise pretty close.
But that's what I mean. It's not to me, but I guess everybody chooses their own option.
Yeah.
A sundae, a turtle sundae, is much more enjoyable than just sipping on a shake.
No, there's times where a milkshake just really works. And I even, you know, I'm crazy. I would even go malt over milkshake.
I was just going to ask you that,
that's
too, because
really
Michael
good.
Will only drink malts.
Yeah.
And what is the difference? Just they add malt powder?
Yeah. It's just got a
malty
know,
flavor.
A maltier flavor.
It's
yeah.
salty is what it is.
It's not really salty. I don't know how to describe it, but I can always tell the difference. And that adds, malt powder is really high in calories too, by the way.
I'm not, all I'm just saying, and I guess I'm not even talking calories, but if you're going to go for an ice cream treat, to me, a sundae is the way to go because you have ice cream.
It's got a little bit of everything.
You got your hot fudge and caramel, and you have your roasted pecans.
Right.
Or do you say pecan?
I switched that up. Banana, if you're so inclined.
Oh, banana
split.
There's
a lot of good stuff
in
there.
See, but a shake, you just sip it, and that's it. It's like you have no teeth left, and they have to grind up your sundae and put it in a cup.
You should work in a booth right next to the where people are ordering and tell them that. Now, Steve knows a little something about the milkshakes. Let's share this with the class, Steve. What do you know about the milkshakes?
So I'm a geologist.
Yes.
And over the summer was at a bentonite mine in Wyoming.
What is bentonite? And, that's a mineral or a gem?
It's a mineral. It's kind of like a fine-grained dirt.
Yeah.
And they use that as a construction material to cap wells. And also, they use it as a thickening agent for milkshakes at McDonald's. And I would assume, you know, Wendy's, too.
That's
that's why they're not called milkshakes. They're called just shakes or frosties because they don't have milk in them. So that also got me thinking, you know, what other stuff are they hiding from us? And I always hear, you know, Taco Bell, they say melty cheese on their commercials.
Sure.
And so is that really cheese, or is that just some type of cheese product that they name melty?
I imagine it to be cheese. I don't know what they would be putting in as a cheese substitute, because cheese is fairly easy to obtain. But a good question. I don't know for sure.
Then don't eat there. That's all I have to say. And can I just say I went to the Snopes.com because this has been a rumor going around. The actual ingredients in a McDonald's shake, whole milk, sucrose, cream, non-fat milk solids, corn syrup solids, mono and diglycerides, guar gum.
Is there some guar gum in there?
Imitation vanilla flavor, carrageenan, cellulose gum, and vitamin A palmitate. And it says that it is false. The claim that McDonald's beverages contain yucky non-food substances.
Oh, all right.
So Snopes says that is not true.
So guar gum is not a yucky non-food substance?
I'm not saying those other items. I mean, you're getting chemicals in everything you order unless you cook it yourself.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, telling you what I was told by a geology professor, so...
Is it like silica? Because at least if you have a milkshake, then your teeth will be whiter.
Oh, look at you with the positive spin. That was excellent. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Have a good week.
You guys have a nice day.
All right.
Guar gum. I love that band.
They're fantastic. We must take a break, and then some news, and then more show. Stay here. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Ryan.
Uh-oh. Clearing.
Clear. You know, Wendy, they're making a movie out of Wonder Woman. So they just started showing the trailer for Wonder Woman, and people are very excited because everyone loves Wonder Woman. She made a brief appearance in Superman versus Batman, and people said, we want to see more Wonder Woman, so they've given her own movie. But now the trailer came out, and people are furious. Do you know why? This is so ridiculous.
Too much cleavage?
No. I don't think that would make people furious, would it?
Women, maybe.
Actually, this is the real reason people are angrier is even sillier than that.
Wow. I don't know. Can you give me a hint, or do you just want to tell me?
It has something to do with her body.
She's not your average woman.
Well, she's Wonder Woman.
But is she too thin?
No, she's not too thin.
Is she a real Wonder Woman?
Nope.
Size 12?
It's a woman named Gal Gadot. Have you ever seen her?
No, but I will look her up.
She's very pretty. She's an Israeli actress. Like I said, she played Wonder Woman in Batman versus Superman or Superman versus Batman or Roe versus... I can't remember who... There were two people at odds in this one. So she's in that. She just had a baby like a day or two ago.
She's beautiful.
Very pretty. She's very pretty. So what is it about her or her body that would make people so upset when they see the trailer for Wonder Woman, do you think?
Well, I can only think either she's portrayed as like a Barbie doll where it's fake or she's heavy.
Nope. None of those. They're upset because in the trailer, there's several scenes where you can see this. She doesn't have any underarm hair And people say that if she was truly Wonder Woman, she wouldn't care about that, and she wouldn't even have time to shave underneath her arms.
She would just do it very quickly, so it wouldn't take much time. She's not Sheena.
Right. That's true.
Sheena, what was that?
Queen of the Jungle.
Yeah.
So she's not Sheena, Queen of the Jungle.
And she's American, isn't she? She's not European. So she would shave her armpits.
She's from an island. In the storyline, she's from some island near Greece. So I don't know if that island, if the women on that island are
Let's get Andrea Darlis here and have her raise her arm. Andrea, just check it.
I thought, when I first read this story, I thought it was going to be the exact opposite, that she maybe she had some underarm hair, and people went, well, that's not sexy for Wonder Woman to have hair down. What are you doing? Shave underneath there, Wonder Woman, or have Aquaman help you. Isn't
there
a superwoman named Epilady? I think there is. Can Epilady come to her defense and help her?
I have just absolutely had it with everyone. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
For years, women have shaved their underarms here in America and elsewhere around the world.
Right.
There are some people in Europe that don't want to shave their armpits. Madonna went without shaving for a while, then don't shave.
Right.
But I think the majority of women shave under their arms, except in the winter. Sometimes we put it off a little more than we should.
But is that enough to get you, like, if you were in a theater watching a different movie, let's say you went to buy a ticket to some other movie and they show the preview for Wonder Woman, and you're just sitting there looking at this going, what kind of junk is this with Wonder Woman having her underarms shaved? I want my money back. I'm not sitting for this.
I want my citizen's card back. This is just outrageous to me,
yes,
Bill.
Yes, it is. Here's the story out of MSN. The internet is not happy with the new Wonder Woman and her armpits. Leave it to the internet to notice something so specific. People are upset with Wonder Woman's armpits, and they're making their voices heard. The trailer for the new Wonder Woman movie was finally released, and it's clear that Diana Prince, played by Gal Gadot, very pretty, is going to kick some major butt. Why? Because she's fierce, she's brilliant, and an all-around tough girl, to say the least. But that's not what the internet is talking about. It is her hairless armpits. In the trailer, we see Diana lifting a car and throwing it down the street. Now, that should upset some people.
Automakers. That's not
yeah, it should upset Detroit.
I'm looking at the cartoon, and she does not have hair under her arms.
No, in the cartoon, she didn't, and
then
I don't think
up.
Linda Carter did. Did she? I don't remember seeing Linda Carter have any
kind of
hair going
on. I don't know. I was too busy looking at her boobs.
All right. We're able to get a solid view of her armpits, which happen to be freshly shaven and seem to be digitally bleached. As you can imagine, people are angry because, according to fans, how does Wonder Woman have time to groom her armpits when she is busy fighting the conflicts of the world?
How does she have time to get her hair so beautiful and shiny? How does she have time to get dressed in the morning? How does she have time to wear lipstick?
Right. Or to go and buy an invisible plane? I wouldn't know where to buy an invisible plane. She went plane shopping and said, I'll take the invisible plane. And Lyle Wagner. He was Steve Trevor.
Yes, he was.
More specifically, why would an Amazon...
Oh, my goodness.
It says it on MSN. This isn't me.
You know what happened when you said that word last time.
Everyone got mad at me. But Amazon, again, sidebar, is a term of endearment. It's a good...
A powerful, strong woman. She's got biceps bigger than yours.
Gal Gadot does. She's built. Built to last. Why would an Amazon with no previous contact with the outside world care about the hair under her arms? That's the question that people are asking. Warner Brothers says that the internet is not happy. They're copying to this. Warner Brothers is the company that puts out Wonder Woman. They are copying to the fact that the internet is not happy with Wonder Woman's armpits. So will they reshoot scenes?
God, I hope not.
Will they just digitally enhance the scenes they've shot to make these people happy?
I won't go see it if she does.
All taken care of in post-production. Everything.
Fans have taken to Twitter to discuss their concerns about her lack of armpit hair. This, by the way, the true barometer of whether or not you have too much time on your hands, if you're on the internet complaining about this. While we understand that where the fans are coming from, here's the thing.
I don't understand where they're coming from. I don't.
Wonder Woman can still be a symbol of female empowerment even if she shaves her armpits, they're saying. The two things are not mutually exclusive. Plus, in the history of Wonder Woman, she has never, ever had hair under her arms.
All right, Craig has the absolute best argument about this. Hi, Craig.
Hello, Wendy. I have to admit, where did Superman find time to shave? He was busy fighting crime.
See? Right. He didn't have a full beard.
Right.
Every Superman you ever seen all through time, he's always clean shaven.
Superheroes are very into grooming.
I mean, what does that matter? As long as they're fighting the crime and getting rid of the criminals, who cares about the underarms or the beard?
I'm with you, Craig.
Amen, Craig.
That's so true.
That's it. We're done. We've ruled on this.
Right. We'll take a quick break. We'll talk to Bridget Carey from CNET next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It is the first Tuesday of spring, our first Tech Tuesday of spring. Bridget Carey, senior editor from CNET, on the line with us. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do we want to start with today?
Oh, there's a bunch of Apple news that just dropped this morning. And it wasn't a big Apple event. They just kind of announced quietly some updates to their iPads and iPhones. So there's a new iPad that's cheaper, in case you still care about tablets, because obviously people don't care that much. They just put a press release about it.
Is that true? Because I love my iPad, although really all I do is play bigger Candy Crush on it and keep up with Facebook and email.
It's not that people don't love it. It's that it's not the sexiest product category anymore, because your tablet lasts you a while. You're not always looking to upgrade it very often. And so the category slows down in sales. That said, you know, they gave it a processor boost, lowered the price. So now they're, you know, it starts at about $300 or so. And that goes on Friday on sale. But also, if you are looking for an iPhone 7, they now make it in red. So you can buy
Woo-hoo!
It in red.
Who cares?
Devil can buy one. It'll match his outfit.
Got to match. It's for their red AIDS awareness campaign.
Oh.
But they also kind of gave a memory boost to their really cheap iPhone SE version. You know, these are small little changes that weren't a big deal. But I think what was most interesting of all had nothing to do with hardware, but it's a new app that Apple created. It's called Clips. And the point is to make it really easy for you to create social media videos that have fun effects and little emojis on them and share it with your friends and add video or not add video, but add music to your video. And you see this a lot with, you know, all the social medias right now, Facebook, Instagram, they all want to have creative ways for you to make little videos and share it. But now Apple's saying, hey, download our Clips app. We'll help you make something really easy and quick. And you could then share it to those networks. And I think what was the most interesting wasn't that, oh, you could throw emojis on it or some little, you know, pictures like arrows and stuff. It's that it will automatically transcribe what you're saying to add captions in real time. So if you talk like this, the words will come in real time as you say them on the bottom. And that's because we listen. That's because, you know, on Facebook, we're sometimes watching video with the volume off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Bridget, I keep seeing commercials, and maybe this is what you're talking about right now, but is this the thing where you can send little, they're like cartoon emojis, and like it's the Tasmanian devil, and his eyes get real big and then real small? Is that what I'm seeing commercials for all the time now?
Well, you probably should just see, like, every app now has its own effect. I think with Apple Clips, it's trying to ride that trend. They don't have as many stickers and fun, silly cartoon effects as, say, what you're seeing on some other apps, like what Facebook does, Instagram, and Snapchat.
Yeah.
But it kind of has that feel, and they're going to add more effects in time, like filters that make it look black and white or just like a cartoon, you know. And you put that over your video, and suddenly you're just quickly throwing together something from your vacation or an outing. It looks fun. It looks shareable. It's square because we're all taking vertical video now, and so they crop it so it looks nice on phones.
Yeah.
And then boom, you just upload it or share it to your friends. There was a feature. Now, that comes out in April, so we haven't tested it, you know, like to see how it works in the real world. It is able to detect the faces of people in your video if those people are like already in your iPhone, you know, contacts or synced up, and it can suggest, hey, you should share it with these people. Or if you're saying someone's name, it's going to pair it with like your iPhone contacts and say, oh, you mentioned Susie. You know, do you want to share it with Susie?
No.
That part is wild to me. I like to see how that actually works, or if it, you know, if it's always accurate. But they're kind of making it a very easy editing tool with a little bit of social media sprinkled in, you know.
Is it free?
Yes, it's free.
With in-app purchases? Because I hate when they do that.
What does that mean?
You never...
It means it's free to get the app, but if you want any of the better components of it,
you have to upgrade,
you have
and
to
that
pay
costs
for
money.
It.
All right.
I think Apple's not going to go down that route because they just want you to buy more iPhones and then you know, Apple products, aren't they great? I'll just keep doing that and share them with my friends, you know, and they'll leave the other apps to do that.
Is there a downside to that facial recognition? What I guess it sounds good, but there must be some negative to that, right? It could be wrong sometimes, right?
Well, it's wrong for me all the time in the current Photos app. So if you use Photos right now with the latest, you know, software, it kind of says, oh, do you want to see other photos with this face in it? And I'm like categorized as five different people, depending if I wear glasses, if I have no makeup on, or if I'm just having like a bloated day.
Yeah.
There's like five different types of Bridgets and things. So, and you know, maybe there are, but my phone doesn't need to judge me on that.
No, you don't need that aggravation.
For some reason, I have 76 pictures of you on my phone.
Of me?
If you go to your photos and it has, most of them are of my son, Michael, and then 76
there's a bunch of me
are
and
of you.
I'm sleeping in all of them. How did you get those pictures?
And then when I click it, it's just like when I download, our podcast and then our promo pictures come up. So see here, and then pictures we've taken in the studio. So you're on my phone. I got to get you off my phone.
All right.
Can I just shake it?
Yeah.
And it'll go away?
Yeah.
I have a Nintendo Switch question for you. This was a handheld thing, a little bit bigger than like a Nintendo DS. And the cool thing about it is it comes with a cradle. You can put it in the cradle and then play these video games on your television screen. And we've had a lot of fun with it, although... Mom of the year, each kid got their own for an early graduation present because Michael's going to go to school, go away to college. Dylan will be home. They each have a cradle to put it in, and one of the cradles is kind of mushed in a little bit. And so when you slide the Switch unit in it, it's been said on the internet, as I've been doing research, that it's going to scratch the screen of the Switch when you put it in the cradle. Have you heard anything about some of these cradles being... wrong?
Oh, if I would immediately try to get a return if that's the case. I mean,
you can see where it's just like a U-shaped thing that you put the screen in.
You should bring that back.
And I bought the extended warranty, so that should be covered on it. But
bring it back.
It's a headache for you to now have to deal with that.
I know.
Yeah, it sounds like they were just making too many of these and they didn't take the time. I know that I've read that they've doubled the amount of manufacturing that they're doing on these because of the high demand. So they're just like pumping them out now, but that's awful. And, you know, when it comes to the Switch, I've read a couple different complaints about the quality not being always the best in certain cases, like, you know, but I haven't heard that specifically because I'm not following the Switch news like some other gamer reporters might, but it's a great college gift, that's for sure. Because
that's what I thought.
How portable it is, you know, just jump from the TV to wherever you are in the dorm. But then, yeah, you don't want to have to deal with an issue like that. So
bring it back.
I have to.
Yeah, bring it back for sure.
All right.
Bridget, what's coming up?
Well, there's all sorts of stuff today. I think we're also talking about, I have like 20 tabs open, so my like brain is on.
That's all right.
It's always on a different tech event of the flavor of the moment.
Yeah.
But I think with the Apple news, you know, you can always dive into CNET to get more details on this Clips app because I've been overviewing it a bit and, I don't know. It seems interesting, but I like to try it out myself. That's for sure.
Excellent.
Well, good. Thank you very much. It's a Tech Tuesday. She is Bridget Carey, and you can find her at CNET.com. She's a senior editor. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, TK.
Bye, Bridget. All right. We'll take a quick break. We have news next and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Ryan, you can't see it because you're not in the studio, but Wendy's head is turning completely around, 360 degrees.
Did you want some Campbell's green pea soup?
No, thank you. I'm fine. That's today's special at the WGN cafeteria. the Pope has said something very fascinating to me. Pope Francis, who seems to be...
a hip pope.
One of the best of all popes. I don't know how you get a better pope than this Pope Francis.
He just seems very contemporary.
Doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so now he's telling the Catholic Church that it's time to get more exorcists, that we need more exorcists.
You're looking for a part-time job, aren't you?
I'm not a priest. You have to be a priest to be an exorcist. Yeah, because I would do it. I would love to be an exorcist.
Too scary for me.
It would be very scary, wouldn't it?
And the priests, I know I've just seen it in The Exorcist movie and plenty of other movies and The Exorcist television show. The priests don't, they're unflappable.
Right.
I would be freaking.
It's almost as though the priests who do this haven't seen any movies or TV shows that have featured exorcism.
Right.
Because if they did, they would know it's going to be a...
There's some bad stuff going on.
Very bad. Here's the story. This is out of Huffington Post. And good for the Pope for speaking up about this and not trying to hide it. You know, he seems to be very transparent. It seems like it's kind of the time. Pope Francis has called on priests to contact exorcists when their parishioners are facing spiritual crises linked to supernatural causes. Now, I know in the past they have played this down. They have said, no, you know, some things have happened, but we're fine. But now they're copping to it. They're saying, oh, yeah, there's a lot of supernatural causes. Any such exorcists, however, should be chosen with great care and prudence, the pontiff has cautioned. Pope Francis offered his advice last week to hundreds of priests attending a Vatican seminar on dealing with sins of the faithful and recounted the sacrament of reconciliation or confession. A priest needs to take action when he is confronted with real spiritual disorders, the Pope advised, according to agents. Now, this is in French, so I'm not going to say this right. Do you speak any French at all? You speak a little bit, right?
Yeah.
All right. So the first part is agents, A-G-E-N-C-E, which is like agency. And then it's France and then pressier. Is that just the French press? The agent of the French press?
Yeah, I would guess that.
Hey.
Look at
if
you.
I'm not an exorcist, I'm going to be a code breaker. I deciphered that code. When such crises are caused by supernatural... I could speak French, but the English giving me a headache. When they're caused by supernatural forces, Pope Francis added, presumably referring to the devil, a confessor must not hesitate to refer to exorcists. So he says, if you've got a situation there and it seems a little too crazy, a little too supernatural... don't mess around. Get yourself an exorcist. Do it quick. Priests must take care, however, to differentiate between mental illness and demonic possession.
There is a close...
I bet there's some crossover.
Yeah.
I bet there is. The Vatican also holds training sessions for exorcists. Boy, that'd be a fun camp.
No, it would not.
That would be... I don't know how long that session is, but I want in.
Duck and two and right. three and right. duck again. Right.
There's more coming.
Hands up.
There's more coming.
Pull out your cross.
Yes. I'd have that at ready at all times. That would be in my exorcist utility belt. That would be where the belt buckle is. I would have that ready at all times. I've got a crucifix. They are charged with expelling the devil, he says. Exorcists are charged with expelling the devil from people thought to be possessed. It is not a Catholic practice, often openly spoken about by the church leaders, because it is highly controversial and disdained by skeptics who doubt the existence of a devil and view the practice as based on ancient superstition. So they're kind of covering their bases. They're saying, look, if this exists, we got to be ready for it. But if not, it's not bad to have them ready anyway.
You need someone at the ready.
Yes.
And Kevin, I don't know if you were working with us yet. I think Stephanie Menendez was still with us, but there was some exorcism going on in Indiana.
In a house.
Yeah, and we talked to the priest who performed the exorcism.
Yeah.
We need to get him on again.
Yep.
Because that was pretty fascinating to me. And oddly enough, some of the priests at my parish were listening to us that day.
Yeah.
And I had some interesting conversations with them about exorcisms.
I don't know if you'll remember this, but when you and I were at the Loop at night, we had on a priest from Loyola University who taught catechism classes, but his sidebar was that he did exorcisms, and he said, the church has told me we really appreciate it if you didn't talk about this too much, but I've done too many of them to ignore this. This is something I get called on every couple of months to go out somewhere and perform an exorcism. He goes, they really want me to play it down, but he was doing them regularly.
And that was how many years ago?
That was almost 20 years ago.
And now, you know, the priests at our church believe in them totally.
Right.
And the Pope.
The Pope himself is saying, we got to get an army of exorcists ready. Now listen to this part.
That sounds scary, though. An army of exorcists.
This is the creepiest part of this to me, because it involves a man named William Peter Blatty. Do you know who that is?
Didn't he write The Exorcist?
He wrote The Exorcist, and he just died about a month ago. So listen to this part. Film fans got their first taste of the unusual Roman Catholic ritual in the 1973 hit horror movie The Exorcist. Though the possession depicted in the movie was extremely lurid and controversially profane, now there's more, but I just want to say as a side note, The Exorcist, the book that he wrote, was based on a true story. In the movie, it was a girl. It was Linda Blair playing Reagan. But in real life, it was a boy, and there were a lot of parallels. There were a lot of similarities between the two. The best-selling author of The Exorcist, scriptwriter William Peter Blatty, who was Catholic, said that the film was based on an actual exorcism in the U.S. in 1949. He also researched prayers and incantations that were used in the ritual. The film's director, William Friedkin, witnessed an exorcism back in 2016, just last year,
whoa,
which he recounted in Vanity Fair. There were many similarities between the actual ritual and the rites in the film without the dramatic horror. Friedkin said that he was invited to the ritual in Italy by an exorcist, a father named Gabriel Amorth, because the priest admired the movie. So he, Friedkin, gets the invite from this priest going, hey, I know you directed a movie, but you got to see this to believe it. Come with me to Italy. And there's a real exorcism. But they're not real specific in the story about how much of it. He said there were similarities, but he said without the dramatic horror. So maybe it was, I mean, it might have been real subtle.
A mild exorcism?
Yeah, it was a mild exorcism.
A mild possession?
Does your HMO even cover that? Because mine does not.
That's a great question.
I don't think any of them do.
Wow.
Call Allstate and ask what exorcism insurance would run you.
Just yeah, I'll be doing that. Stay on while the you're line. In the back of the room laughing.
Yeah,
at me.
Get out.
I loved that you got me hooked on that exorcism TV series.
Wasn't that
was really good and really
good.
Freaky.
Yeah. That was filmed here in Chicago.
Is it coming back?
It doesn't look like it. Didn't do great in the ratings. Didn't do great. So if you're the Catholic Church, what do you do with this? Like, the story goes on to talk about how the number of incidents is up, you know, and I mean, really, we live in a troubled time. So you would imagine that the number of incidents are up. But if
Is
you're
that
the Catholic
correlate?
Church, I wonder.
Bad times, the devil's like, okay, I'm going to possess
Jumping
this person
in.
Because no one's going to notice. There's so much bad in the world that I'll get by for a while.
There could be something to
Maybe
that.
Maybe I'm the devil. Because that was a really good defense
that
for
That was
him.
An excellent defense. But if you're the church, do you cop to this? I mean, I applaud the Pope for saying, hey, we got to be ready. Who knows what's ahead? Let's just get the exorcists ready.
I say the church should agree, you know, get ready and say, yes, it does happen.
Yeah.
Maybe lie a little bit. Well, you're not supposed to lie if you're a priest.
No.
Maybe under embellish. What's the opposite of embellish?
Just downplay.
Downplay the role or downplay the number of exorcisms that are currently going on. But
just say we get them every once in a while and we want to cover all bases and have somebody ready.
If Exorcism Army is not a band name
Army
right
of
now.
Exorcists.
Oh, that's what it was?
Yeah.
Army of Exorcists.
I'm
writing
I'm going to start
down.
Drawing the logo on my folders like I did in fourth grade. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. And
bless
then there's
you,
more
Bill.
Show. Well, bless you, Wendy. I appreciate that. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show coming. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. In a little while, one of the sons of Hugh Hefner will be joining us. Cooper Hefner will be joining us. He is the chief creative officer of Playboy magazine, Playboy Enterprises, the magazine did something very controversial about a year and a half ago. They decided, even though it's Playboy magazine, that no more naked ladies in the Playboy magazine. that you can find those in other places. They're going to focus on other things. And now they just made a statement about 3 or 4 weeks ago saying...
It says, whoops.
Right. We have changed our minds. Turns out you fellas like the naked ladies in the Playboy, so we're going to put them back in.
I didn't really understand, you know what you're getting with Playboy. I mean, how many years has that magazine been published?
My guess is, I'm guessing somewhere between 50 and 60, right? At least 60.
At least.
So probably more.
You know what you're getting.
Yeah.
Like when you used to get the Sears catalog when you were a little kid, so you could circle things for your Christmas list, you knew what you were getting.
Right.
And I bet you paused on the pages that had the women in bras having coffee.
We would, every year, the Christmas catalog would come, I want to say in October or November, right? Does that sound about right?
Probably
October,
November.
November? So we would flip through all the toy pages and circle the toys that we wanted. And then magically, we would go to the ladies' underwear section. And I always marveled at, there was always a picture or two of three or four ladies out just pointing upwards at something and all looking, gazing upwards. I don't know what they were looking
at. In their bra and panties.
Yeah, they just wore their underwear.
Here's what I didn't understand about the Sears catalog. Men in their tidy whiteys who are always looking at their watch.
Yes.
The tidy whiteys were really tight and... you know, when you saw your brother or your dad walk by, tighty whiteys weren't tight. They were always baggy.
Always.
So why do they fit so perfectly in a catalog?
I don't know. Did you notice that? Yeah.
It was like they were starched. Like they were made out of...
I think maybe they were starched for the picture.
Because, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience seeing men in tidy whiteys. Again, it was mainly my brother.
Not back then. Later on, maybe, but not back then.
By the time I saw men's underpants, they weren't tidy whiteys anymore, I guess. It was more boxers.
Right.
And currently boxer briefs.
Right.
There's a secret about Jimmy Mac.
Oh, thank you for sharing that with the
class. But the tidy whiteys, I don't know why they're called that, because I swear to God, I never saw them tight on a guy.
Oh, they, you can, yeah, you can.
If they're too small.
Not even if they're too small. I mean, there's varying degrees of tightness to your tidy whiteys.
But those were like pristine.
They were, right, right.
The things I noticed out of the Sears catalog. But yeah, so you know what you're getting with the Sears catalog, and you knew what you were getting with Playboy magazine. So I thought it was kind of a strange decision to take the nudity out of it.
Well, Cooper, who's coming in, Hugh Hefner's son, Cooper Hefner, who is the chief creative officer, it was his decision to reinstate the naked women in Playboy magazine. And I understand, you know, their point initially was, if you have a computer, if you have the internet, if you have a telephone, you get plenty of access.
Think you can get.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but that's a computer. Some people like to look through magazines. That's why I get the Oprah magazine. I can find articles online, but I like to look at Oprah on the cover, and I like to thumb through it.
But to your point, what if O Magazine said, much like Playboy said, no more naked women, what if Oprah's magazine said, you know what, no more Oprah. We will take your challenge, and we will remove Oprah from the O Magazine. Then nobody wants to buy Oprah anymore.
Can I make a confession about my subscription?
Yeah.
We had Kim Gordon in one day, and I remember saying it was like a Groupon where you could get a year subscription to O Magazine for $5.
Oh,
so I thought I'd
bad.
Do it. As we're getting construction in our house, there was a pile of unopened Oprah magazines. I've not even looked at it. I've let Oprah down.
How are you able to keep up with what Oprah's doing every month if you're not reading the magazine?
I've been a very bad fan.
You hate to hear this.
Here's my confession.
You hate to hear this.
I treat this microphone as a confessional very frequently.
I have to say this. It's been years since I've seen a Playboy magazine, but there
I'll
was
get
a time.
You one.
No, you don't need to. The beauty of the naked lady is they never go out of style. Like you could pick one up today from 1968 and you go, yeah, that's still working.
They were different. 1968.
They were still girl next door. Like, the girl next door Playmate went all through the 60s, 70s, and maybe into the early 80s. But then there was a much more kind of processed look to the Playmates, right? They were more
They were
enhanced.
Blonder. They were bigger.
Yeah. They
Where
were
it
more
counts.
Enhanced.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a definite difference.
But I would have thought, and I'm not running Playboy magazine, so what do I know? But I would
Dreams
think...
Dreams do come true.
I'm going to see if Cooper will sell them to me. Come on, let me be CEO. Let's see. What's the worst that can happen? Come on.
Naked cartoons. That's the right. worst thing that could happen. Right. Although we saw those.
Yeah, Little Annie Fanny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen my share of Playboys.
Yeah, sure.
1953, by the way. Is that the year you got, Kevin? 1953?
53 is when it came out.
Well, that's so when it was first
64
published.
64 years old. Wow. Wow. And the first Playmate was?
That really beautiful woman.
Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
Yeah. But except I don't think, if memory serves me right, I don't think they were called Playmates right off the bat. I think that's a word that came up. But the centerfold, or whoever the girl was in the middle, that was Marilyn Monroe the first time.
What a good guess.
Yeah, that's not a bad move. That gets some attention.
Well, right? We can ask all these questions.
Yeah.
In just a few minutes.
Cooper Hefner, Hugh Hefner's son, and Stephen David, who's the executive producer of American Playboy, which is the life of Hugh Hefner. It's premiering on Amazon Video on April the 7th. We'll get you all that right after the news. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Ryan. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. If you're talking about great American success stories, the name Hugh Hefner is absolutely going to be mentioned. There's no way around that. Hugh Hefner's son, Cooper, who is the chief creative officer of Playboy Enterprises, is in studio with us, as is Stephen David, the executive producer for a great docuseries called American Playboy, which you can see tonight, 8 p.m. at the AMC River East. We'll give you all the information on how you can get tickets to see this. But everyone's going to be able to see this very, very soon in the next few weeks. Correct, guys?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be on Amazon, and it begins April 7th, Amazon Video, which I subscribe to. I'm looking very forward to seeing this. I see Playboy in a different light than you do, Bill.
I would imagine. The light I see it in is a dim light with the door locked, but Wendy is a little different.
But, you know, this is something that, you know, how many years? 1953 was first published?
63 yeah. years.
Okay. I waited a few years. I'm not that old. But, you know, girls would look at a Playboy magazine and say, wow, I'm going to look like that someday. You know, so we yeah. looked at it in a different way. Girls looked at it as well. And it was done very tastefully. And I like the cartoons, to be honest with you.
I'll let my dad know.
I do have to say, since Wendy and I do this for a living, one of my first forays into the interview was the Playboy interview. At the time, when I was growing up, I don't think anyone did a better, more in-depth interview than those Playboy interviews.
Yeah. I mean, we continue to publish incredibly insightful and thoughtful interviews, but it's something that, as I've stepped into the chief creative officer role, I've made an effort to continue.
Yeah. Don't you think that the interview with Jimmy Carter was instrumental in him becoming the president? Because I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
It opened him up. It made a guy that we kind of knew, all of a sudden reading about him and him being so honest in that interview, I think made America aware of what a good guy he is.
I think that's possibly true, but I would also say that, as people do when it comes to Playboy, there was subtext in the interview
sure.
that, you know, people really focused on the sex.
Lust
in my heart.
Yeah.
Which stuck with him for his yeah. entire career. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about the decision a little over a year ago to not having women without their clothes on in Playboy, and you were not a fan of that, were you?
Yes, that's correct. I was not.
Yeah. But it's been reinstated. It's been fixed.
Yes. So the last issue that we published brought back nudity, and I actually stepped into the role of chief creative officer 6 months ago, and that was something that was important to me.
Yeah.
When we did it, there was press that came out, and I think a ton of people made the joke that, well, it seems like a lot of people didn't actually read Playboy for the articles. It was all about the images.
Yeah.
But the reality is when one takes a step back and thinks about it, it was a silly move to remove nudity from the magazine, because at the end of the day, the company and my father were responsible, part of the kickoff of the sexual revolution. So the idea to remove it was... I'm trying to be PC here,
right.
Without being too critical, but was silly. Yeah.
But what prompted that?
It was, I think, a lack of understanding who we are. And when I say we, I mean the brand. while simultaneously believing that there was a business strategy that could be implemented that would actually drive a lot of revenue. So the idea was that a Safe for Work magazine and a Safe for Work site would ultimately lead to a whole bunch of advertising revenue that we were missing out on.
Right.
And what we found, which was what I was saying before nudity was taken out of the magazine, was ultimately advertisers are paying for Playboy's point of view.
Sure.
That really, although we have product in the US and in different countries and we have different channels with content, the brand really sells a philosophy. And if that's not being promoted and displayed in a way that makes sense, then we really don't have anything at all.
Yeah. So true. Stephen David is here. Stephen is the executive producer of the show we're talking about, American Playboy, which is the life of Hugh Hefner. I don't think there was anyone that preceded Hugh Hefner. I don't think there will be anyone that comes after Hugh Hefner that's been more important in terms of the sexual mores of this, not just the country, but the world. Has there been?
No, and I think what's really interesting is if you go back to the context of that time and you realize, you know, pretty soon after World War II, how repressive society was, you really can take the entire sexual revolution and pinpoint it to one person.
Yeah.
So I don't see how that is ever going to happen again. He's got to be one of the most iconic people
sure.
in the history of the world.
Sex was always discussed in hushed tones. You didn't want people to hear what you were talking about. But your dad, Hugh Hefner, made it something that could be talked about openly, freely.
Yeah, and we go into the fact that when he was in college, the Kinsey study came out, which is the first study that basically told you that men and women like sex.
Yeah.
And everyone was sort of blown away by that. And before that, it was just thought, women didn't like sex, men did.
We just put up with it. That's what it was said to believe. So American Playboy, this chronicles all of your father's life. Is there some little spinoff? Is there something that's focused on more than others?
Well, the show really takes place in the early stages for the most part of the company, I think for obvious reasons, which is that seems to be the most intriguing at this point in time in the sense of culturally and socially people are fascinated with the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I think, you know, for obvious reasons, we draw a lot of parallels to what's happening now to then. And I think what the first 7 or 8 episodes take place from 53 to
majority of it. The show really takes place up until I would say the late 80s. And that's, you know, the origin story of it. And you know, it hits the heyday years.
We were talking about the first playmate, although not referred to as a playmate, was Marilyn Monroe. How did they swing that?
So I would say you should watch the show.
I'm going to watch. I'll watch the show.
My dad actually went on this epic hunt for the image, which was published in a calendar, but no one had actually seen.
Yeah.
And he ends up negotiating and purchasing the rights to publish. And
he found that picture in Chicago.
Yeah.
About, I don't know, 15 minutes away from where he lived.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
And bought it from the guy. So the guy had it, and he bought it from the guy for like $600. And at that time, Marilyn Monroe was the most famous star in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways, I would say, you know, back to the point of we can look back at history and draw the sexual revolution to one individual. Marilyn Monroe, in a lot of ways, was actually pushing boundaries at that point in time for sex.
Yeah.
So I think in my dad's mind, it made a lot of sense to have her be the first.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Sweetheart of the Month then, but eventually the first playmate.
What a good score for the first issue.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
The philosophy in the early days of Playboy was they wanted the centerfold and most of the women in the magazine to convey that girl next door feeling. But at some point, that kind of went away, didn't it?
Yeah. I always make the joke that the show The Girls Next Door actually didn't have anyone on it that looked like a girl next door.
Right.
But yes, at some point that changed because I think, you know, beauty takes on different look depending on the generation,
mm-hmm.
And the decade. And obviously Playboy told that story and communicated that for 63 years. So
yeah.
Of course there was an evolution there.
Steven, Mr. Hefner rubbed elbows with some of the biggest stars musically, comedically, movie stars, you name it. They were hanging out at the mansion. How do you stay normal? Could he stay normal with that sort of a lifestyle?
I think you know what's really interesting is we see all this because we were allowed to go through all this archive that no one had ever seen. So when you see all this video, we would see all these stars, and they wanted to hang out with Hef.
Yeah,
not the other way around. Yeah. They wanted to be around him. So I think
he had 5 pinball machines.
Oh, yeah, that's why they went there.
How could you not want
to hang out there? That's why all my friends wanted to come to the house, too.
All right, American Playboy. You can see this in its entirety as it premieres on Amazon Video on April 7th. But tonight, world premiere as part of the Chicago International Television Festival, 8 p.m. at the AMC River East, 322 East Illinois. We go to ChicagoFilmFestival.com. Is that where we're sending people? It seems to be sold out, but there will be some cancellations. Perhaps people can't make it. We'll take a quick break. We'll continue talking with Hugh Hefner's son, Cooper, and also Stephen David, executive producer of the docuseries American Playboy. It's 720 WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. Hugh Hefner's son, Cooper Hefner, the chief creative officer of Playboy Enterprises, is here in studio with us, as is Stephen David, the executive producer of a new docuseries called American Playboy. The world premiere takes place tonight at the Chicago International Television Festival. Go to ChicagoFilmFestival.com. All the information is there. What's the biggest misconception about your dad?
Ooh, biggest misconception about my dad. God, what a tough question. I think it depends on who you're talking to. When you talk to people who are my age, probably that he's just an old guy running around the house.
Does he wear clothes or just in a robe all the time?
He's in his PJs all the time. I used to be so embarrassed when I'd bring friends over and he was walking around in his purple and red and green silk shiny PJs. And then as I got older, I grew into this appreciation of looking at him and saying, wow, if you can create a gig and wake up every single day in your PJs and go to work, you've done something right with your life.
That is perfect.
Yeah. I think that's probably the biggest misconception, though.
When they were casting this, was your name ever brought up as potentially playing your dad? Because you look and sound almost exactly like him.
Yeah.
Did that come up at any point?
Yes. It was a brief conversation, but we didn't get into the room where we were actually having a serious combo about it. But yes, I will tell you that the actor that was cast, though, looks eerily similar to my dad.
Oh, good. Very, very good.
And you had mentioned this footage you were going through to find out some stuff. Will we get to see the footage in this docuseries?
Yeah, the docuseries is really mostly the footage with some, you know, recrease. So it's a mix of mm-hmm. the two. So you get the feeling of what it was like to have lived that life mixed in with the real footage as it was happening. And we do have this amazing access to this footage that people haven't seen before that is part of Hefner's essentially presidential library. That he has, it's all in the top of the mansion. The top floor of the mansion is basically a presidential library with thousands of hours of footage, photographs, archive. And so we had access to all of it to make this.
Wow.
How cool is that?
He has led certainly an extremely public life, sometimes for the better, sometimes not. But what did you each learn about him that you didn't know going into the project?
I learned a lot. I mean, I probably, like everyone else, I seen the magazine many times.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that much about Hefner. And there are so many things. He was involved with a lot of social issues, which was surprising. I got to sit with him about a year ago for like an hour and a half, and I kept asking, why? Why did you do it? Because you see the lifestyle, but you also see that his whole thing was really about freedom. He kept trying to... He grew up in a very repressed household.
Yeah.
And so And he talks about it in this documentary, how there was no love, no hugging. And so, in a way, you see him trying to get over this by what he does with his own life and trying to help others. And so it's that was a surprising thing to me of how much he was involved in all these civil rights and rights for anything.
Sure. Yeah. Cooper, how about you?
I actually, there was nothing that I'm very familiar with my dad's story. So there was nothing that surprised me. I would say that the process of actually putting the show together was surprising because I thought that my dad would relax a little bit and allow Steven and the team to sort of do their thing. And the reality was, he could not be more meticulous when it came to the details of, no, that's not what happened in 1963. Or, you know, he's a major movie buff and yeah. A major fan of television and storytelling. And the reality is telling his story his way or participating in that was very important. So I think that's what was the biggest surprise to me was that he was, he didn't want to, there was no negotiating of having him be hands off.
But that makes sense because he's being represented. He wants to make sure it's accurate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But also, it just, you know, sometimes it's nice to get a little bit fantastical with a story.
Oh,
and,
sure.
He wasn't
buying that.
No.
There was one time we got a note after we had filmed that somebody was actually wearing a cast in 1967 while she was in that car.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
He wanted it to be real.
Yeah.
That's admirable.
It's very admirable. He spawned a lot of imitators. Bob Guccione, Larry Flint, Al Goldstein. But he's different from those guys in a lot of ways. And that's a conscious effort, right? He didn't want to be like the other guys doing that.
No. I think that, again, when one thinks about the Playboy philosophy as well as what his legacy is, it was really to say sex doesn't have to be something that's dirty. It doesn't have to be removed from a sophisticated lifestyle.
Yeah.
And the combination of the two at the end of the day is sort of really the DNA of Playboy. And I will say, although one can argue what dirty is when it comes to sex, I think the other individuals who you mentioned probably are not operating with that in mind.
Right. Was there a friendship at all with any of those other guys, or was it a bitter rivalry? How would you classify it?
I think my dad would say that it was a bitter rivalry.
Yeah.
In the sense of, you know, my dad had a very clear vision and belief of how sex should be interpreted in society, and that was communicated constantly through the brand.
Yeah.
And those guys obviously communicated that in their own way through their publications, and that was that.
Yeah.
Was he the guy who gave you the talk about the birds and the bees, and how was that?
My parents obviously, as you could imagine, have a pretty liberal
right.
attitude about sex. I would say it's more European than it is American.
Yeah.
But my parents, I remember being 14 years old, and before we even had a conversation about sex, I walked into my bathroom, and beneath the sink there was a box of condoms, and I was mortified.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they said, well, we're not going to ask, but the reality is we know what you're going to be thinking about over the next couple of years, and be safe. So
that's solid parenting.
Yeah. That is.
Yeah.
And parenting has changed since we grew up.
Dramatically. Yes. And I mentioned the Playboy interview earlier. And yeah, the magazine will always be known for the beautiful women that it featured. But you guys also had an incredible knack with the Music Hall of Fame. Every year you'd pick somebody in the Music Hall of Fame. Every year you guys would do previews of college basketball and college football that were dead on accurate. The cartoons were always funny. The first time I ever saw Dennis Miller, he had won some comedy contest in Playboy magazine when he was still in college. I'd never even heard of him. So you guys were at the forefront of so many different things early on. And I think that needs to be part of the legacy that's Playboy, don't you?
Absolutely. I will tell you that it is. I mean, again, I'm in my mid-20s, so my focus is primarily continuing to introduce the brand from a content point of view online for a new audience. But I consistently take a step back and say, how can we make sure that we hold on to our editorial credibility? How can we make sure that we're getting the right people involved in the brand so that 63 years of history and publishing respect stays, whether that's online or in the magazine?
Yeah. for sure.
I'll renew your subscription.
Thank you, Wendy. That's the reason we had you guys on. I just wanted to convince Wendy.
We'll give you a free subscription.
Oh.
Oh, my husband just texted me.
Oh, hold on. This just
what about me? Good luck with all this.
Yeah, great to meet both of
it.
You. The show, again, is called American Playboy. The world premiere is tonight at the Chicago International Television Festival. Go to chicagofilmfestival.com/television-festival. It's all right there. And continued success to both of you. Thanks for being
thank
here.
You. Hey, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. We'll take a quick break and find out what's next on the Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.